Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us on a very special episode of Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio. My name is Miro, and I will be your host for today's show. We have a very special series of mini podcasts for you today, following the 25th anniversary celebration of Lid Publishing, and of course, Lid Editorial, and we'll be having a number of speakers and panelists from the event joining us for a brief conversation about the topics of discussion. First off today, we have with us Ignacio De La Torre. How are you today?
Hi, thank you.
It's very nice to have you on as the first guest of the day. And today we'll be talking about markets, about the technological reality of things, and of course how companies can adapt with the coming changes. So the first question to start off is, what do you expect the market to look like in, let's say, 20 years?
I believe that we will still be enjoying low levels of unemployment, but new employment will dramatically change. I think that once a child gets into the school and once he leaves, two-thirds of the new jobs will have changed. So this would have profound consequences in the labor markets.
And how can companies actually combat this? What can they do to adapt to this new technological reality?
I think the key issue is to be humble, which means that the worst competition is that doesn't or is not similar to you. You know, many railways companies, they thought that they competed against other railway companies. I didn't understand the transformations that were happening in the U.S. economy, and exactly the same happens today. You see what's happening with the big retailers, and they are being killed by Amazon. No one would have thought about Amazon in the past. So I think that humility is critical in order to understand how new players can disrupt your sectors going forward.
Yeah, and we're on this very big topic of artificial intelligence and AI and what impact it's going to have on us. Should we expect it to eliminate jobs altogether, or are we going to work with it?
Well, the first robot I know of was the tractor, which was introduced in 1804, yep. And 45% of population work in agriculture. Today, only 2% work in agriculture, and as you know, the unemployment rate in the States is 3.8%. Which means that, yes, as robots come, less jobs will be on traditional sectors, but new jobs will be created. The question is what happens in the transition, and some people might suffer. So we should be thinking ex ante what kind of policies we want to apply in order to avoid the suffering that might be happening in some segments of our society.
Yeah, absolutely. And just as I'm thinking, certain sectors such as logistics, I mean, driving is arguably the biggest employment for people out there. So it will be definitely stuff to look forward to in terms of solving that issue. And on that topic, what can we actually do to deal with this change in our workplace, as you just touched upon?
What I've seen is that once you see a tech disruption, you also have an educational disruption. So think about the first industrial revolution. You had the first factories, which allowed parents not to have their children working with them in their shops once they were very young. So the elementary school started thanks to the first industrial revolution. Then when the tractor appeared, people were scared to death. But thanks to the tractor, you didn't need to have your boys working with you in the field. And this allowed for many people to go into high school. And then we had the IT revolution in the 60s, which was parallel to the fact that people started going massively into university, 40% of us. So out of the three revolutions, you had an educational revolution. What's going to happen today? My opinion is that the fourth industrial revolution has to also produce an educational revolution in lifelong learning. It's the only way. I need to think how a truck driver can be retrained in cyber security. And it's very tough. It's the only way. I'm just thinking on lifelong.
Thinking about
your masters.
Absolutely, and on that great point, I'd like to thank you very much for being the first guest today, Ignacio. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
And of course, look forward to more conversations throughout the day, and we'll be happy to bring over to you. And once again, thank you very much for joining us on this podcast for Lid Radio. Thank you. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Lid Publishing's podcast, Lid Radio special edition for our 25th anniversary event. We are coming straight to you from Madrid in Spain, and in the second podcast of our series with speakers and panelists from the event, we have Luis Huete with us. How are you doing today?
Very well. Good morning.
Good morning to you. It was great to hear you speak at the event, and Luis has taken some time to talk with us today, and we're very happy to have him on the podcast. And the first question I have for you is actually, what steps can be taken to ensure that companies and businesses promote a healthy environment in today's working place?
The way we look at it is the following. Is the more internal integration you have in a company, internal integration means that people know how to work together, people respect the diversity, people, so to speak, also end up being have more clarity about the future. The more internal integration, the more external integration they can build. And external integration at the end is providing good service, is being competitive, is being fast to deliver new products. So there is a strong correlation between how healthy is the company in inside with how competitive that company end up becoming in the marketplace.
Absolutely. And in your book, you emphasize that what's good for the individual is good for the company as well. How do you suggest that leaders in business apply this idea practically?
Well, and again, the way I look at things is that we live in an ecosystem. Ecosystem means that there is relationships, everything is interdependent, and whatever happened in my right is going to affect what is going to happen in my left. So part of being a good leader, or part of being someone that with a social conscience, with also with looking in a smart way to what is going on outside, is that you have to be an ecosystem builder. Yeah, an ecosystem builder means that, well, you have to take care of those interdependencies so as to create what we call reciprocity. Yeah, reciprocity is very progressive. It's very much about you end up creating a virtuous circle between people, between elements of the ecosystem. So in that sense, the more a company does to create a healthy environment, a healthy ecosystem, understanding by an ecosystem, a system in which also individuals do benefit from the company, I think that medium-term and long-term, this is going to impact positively in even in the business. Eh? So I think it's a view that precisely because you take care of the shared value, because you sort of think not only on how to create value for yourself, but also how to create value for the people around in the ecosystem, that at the end may create a healthier ecosystem that is going to benefit the company. So it's a little bit longer way, but it's also, I think, a much more sustainable approach to business development, to economic development, to social development and the like.
And of course, this actually feeds into my next question, and that's actually the leader itself, because they're at the forefront of making all of this happen. What are the essential skills that a modern leader must have to make all of this come true?
Well, I think that a great leader is someone that is good to perform at least four roles. One role is to be a producer, meaning by this someone that is strategically oriented, short-term oriented, with a capability to identify opportunities and to a capability to prioritize what is important and also to create an environment in which things can be done. That's one role. And you will see that the whole message is that, hey, you have to be good in the four roles, not just in one. Typically, what I found in many leaders is that they tend to excel in one or two at the cost of the other two. Okay? So here comes the second one. There is a second role that is being a good administrator. A good administrator is someone that is reliable, knows how to create processes and procedures, knows how to organize things so that there is efficiency, so that things get done in an orderly way, and we learn from past experience. That's part of the role. It's not just to produce, it's also to be a good administrator of what is going on. So this is role number two. Role number three, and this is the one that is becoming increasingly important, is the role of being an integrator. An integrator means someone that knows how to bridge people, knows how to create a common understanding, knows how to create an environment in which a collaboration is being nurtured. And in that sense, is to create an environment in which there is more consensus decision-making, there is more a sense of belonging, there is more a sense that we are part of something, and the like. This is the role number three. Then the last role is the role of being an entrepreneur. Entrepreneur is the one that brings new vision, brings new ideas, brings a desire to do business development, is also a desire to build a brand that is consistent and is powerful, and it's something that can be, so to speak, also you can create around that brand a strong personality around the company. So those four things, if you are able to integrate those four roles, then that creates a super person that is able to create an organization that is effective and efficient in the short term and in the long term.
Great, fantastic insight. And just to finish off on that point, you mentioned that usually leaders will have two out of the four necessary parts.
Yes.
Why do you think that is? Why do they compromise two for the sake of the other two, or do they mix and match? Why do you think this is happening?
That's also a very good question, but at the end what happened is it's very difficult to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So typically, even from the genetic point of view, people tend to be some of them more rational, some of them more emotional, some of them more introvert, some of them more extrovert. And then the fact that you've been born a little bit more rational and extrovert makes that the role of producer, you to tend to overemphasize this at the cost of the one that is in the diagonal, that is the one that has to do with the soft side and with the interior, that is the green one. So I think that this is a challenge for all of us, is how can we develop capabilities, competences in those four roles that some of them will not come naturally out of whom you are. This needs something that is a project, something that you pursue. And typically also what we say is that since no one is going to be perfect, at least a management team should be perfect. A management team means that you've got in your inner team people that tend to be very strong in roles or in areas in which you are not as good as them. And you create respect and you create trust, and then eventually a team then becomes very, very strong in the four roles.
Great, fantastic. Thank you very much for that great insight. And of course, thank you very much for the wonderful presentation as well. And to our audience, there'll be links in the description so you can go and find out more about today's event and, of course, the topics of discussion that we discussed. So thank you very much for joining me today, Luis. It's been an absolute pleasure.
My pleasure too.
And we look forward to seeing you for the rest of the special series of LID Radio. And once again, thank you very much for joining us.
Very good.
Hi, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us again on this special edition episode of LID Publishing's podcast, LID Radio. My name is Miro, and of course, I will be your host for this podcast as well. With me today is our author, Antonio Nieto Rodriguez. How are you today, Antonio?
Hi, Miro. I'm very good. Thank you for the invitation.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule and, of course, at the event to join us for this conversation today. It is an absolute pleasure. And of course, for our audience, we just witnessed a great presentation by Antonio, and in the links and the description below, you can find out more about the event that we have going on at the moment here in Madrid. But today we are talking about the theme and topic of projects with Antonio. And let's get into it straight away, because it's a very exciting role. And in today's ever changing and fast pass working environment in all businesses, projects seem to be taking a center stage and they're becoming more and more important. What role does a project manager and a project play in a team nowadays?
Yeah, Mir, I think that you highlight the point that projects are becoming central stage. I've researched projects for the last probably 25 years and going back to 100 years and see the evolution of projects. And what you see is that projects were never central, were never prime. It was always day-to-day, operations, production, sales, finance. But projects was seen as something tactical, something where the value was not obvious, was not strategic. It was done by IT or technical people. So it was a frustration period for many project managers, but with the speed of change and the need to to react quickly to the competition and to bring ideas faster to market, what you're seeing, on top of the robots and the in artificial intelligence, which are taking most of the day-to-day activities, that has come to a place where projects really actually are at the center of organizations and countries and personal lives. So I think it's a very exciting moment for project project managers, project leaders, and it's going to be very, very interesting to watch how this evolves.
Absolutely. And you mentioned there the background and I guess stereotype of a project and project management being within IT or very specific industries or sectors. Now, I absolutely agree with this, and my background is in IT itself, and this is absolutely true, but not so much in recent times. That is changing. So my next question for you would be, how will this job evolve? Now, I think that it will become increasingly more popular in the coming years. Mm-hmm. So can you perhaps tell us why, and how will companies have to adapt into incorporating this culture?
Yeah, I can tell you facts, Miro. I work for a very large bank called BNP Paribas and Fortis. Currently, I'm working for GSK. And one of the, or probably one of the, or the single most important profile that we cannot find, and there's gaps in the market, there's the talent, is project, not maybe managers, but project leaders, people who can work, who can pull teams together of people in different parts of the organizations from different factions, business products, and work together through a project to deliver something new and create value for the organization. So I think the project managers will need to step up. They need to go into more leadership, understand the business, and actually understand the financials of the projects, talk about value, so they need to change the language. But absolutely, it's one of the most strategic skills and profiles that I've seen in most of the industries, personally and from my research. So yes, I think that's the evolution, and it's great news.
Yeah, it's I get this impression of a Swiss Army knife where, you know, a project leader will have to come in and be able to adapt into all different sectors and categories within the business. And that sounds like a very fascinating thing.
Well, I think there's a pro and a con. The con is that you don't know what you're going to be doing in 6 months when the project is over. Yeah. So you need to live with that uncertainty and focus on the project and deliver the project the best you can. You cannot be worried of what I'm going to do next. A successful project, and this is research, requires that you're 150% dedicated to it. So, and that's how projects are successful. So, yes, it's exciting, but it has some side effects, and you need to learn to live with them.
Absolutely. And looking forward to the future, there is a new book coming out from you, and it's going to be called The Project Revolution, and we're very happy to be involved with such a great project. Mm-hmm. Could you perhaps tell us a bit about what the book is going to be about, and a bit of a preview, perhaps, and what we can expect from you in that book?
Yeah, so I'm very pleased to have signed with Lead. I had different offers, but I'm really happy the approach that Lead takes to publishing, and I've noticed that from the beginning. So I'm really, really excited. I think we can do something big. I think there's an opportunity to share this knowledge and do a better world, better companies, and better people. So I'm very excited for this project, which is actually a lot of pressure because I should be writing right now.
Yeah, I think that's the thing all authors end up saying. You know, you think it's going to be easy, it never is.
It never is, but it's a journey, and I'm learning. I knew a lot about projects, but one of the angles I wanted to give to this book is the positive. I think you look at the future, and maybe 80% of what you read is negative. It's the end of the world, the end of work. And I thought, why? And when you look at project books, it's all about project failures. And what I thought is, no, actually, let's look at positive projects. And from a personal perspective, like a wedding, for example, is a project that, without any knowledge, is always delivered on time. Why is that? You plan it 18 months in advance, and you always hit the deadline. So what happens personally? Why are you excited? And what makes that excitement not going into a company project? Why? So I'm looking at positive projects, personal level. I'm looking at companies, very successful projects. What did they do right? And in countries, I'm looking at fascinating cases where For example, Miro, I recently came across the project in Rwanda. Rwanda, 20 years ago, it was a massacre, a genocide, but they decided to fix the situation through a project, which was the Reconstruction Project and Vision 2020. And today, the reconciliation comes about 95% of acceptance. So people who were killing each other 20 years ago are living together in the same town. And when you see in Europe, in North America, where everything is about separation and confrontation, you can have projects which can transform societies and create good for people or social benefits. So yes, it's going to be a very, very positive book, and I'm going to give the ingredients of what to do to make a successful project. It's simple. It's not rocket science. You can assess, you can work to get a project well done. So that's the second part.
Perfect, a great preview. And let's finish up on this very positive note. We have a lot of younger listeners out there, a lot of people getting into projects, getting into project management and becoming leaders themselves. Can you perhaps give them one tip on how they can improve themselves starting tomorrow as they walk into the office?
Well, I think it's a great point. I think that the younger generations probably understand projects much better than actually us or the bit older generation. So they've been living in projects almost all their lives. They know how to use technology in their advantage. So I think that the new generations, they of course they need to embrace, they need to learn the basics, and my book will provide those basics. But I think these people are dreamers, and the good thing about projects is it makes dreams happen. So if you have the tools and the techniques, these people will be able to make a better world. They will, I think, make their career a success. I talk about careers being a set of projects. That's going to be their life. They're going to be jumping from projects to projects. And first, embrace it. Second, learn the basics, the fundamentals to be a good project leader. I think there's a big factor is about understanding the people around you and being emotional, intelligent. So there's a big part of that. It's about leadership. It's about facilitation, but also understanding the business or the content of the project. So keep learning. Learn the fundamentals of projects, and I think it's great for the younger generation. This is it.
Great. Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for this great insight. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast, Antonio.
Anytime. A pleasure, Miro.
And of course, for our listeners, if you enjoyed our conversation today, links in the description below will be provided. So you can go and you can find out, of course, more about the event, more about Antonio, the Project Revolution, and everything that we talked about. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us on this podcast episode. It's always a pleasure to have you join us. And any feedback, reach out to us on social media. We're always really happy to hear what our listeners have to say, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.